Our first speaker is Gary O'Leary. And Gary is with the Department of Economic Development in Victoria. So Gary, I'll go ahead and begin.
Thanks, Susan. Today I'd like to talk about our FACE experiment, ever so briefly, and talk about some new data that we've been analysing from our experiments. Just for those who don't know Australia very well, the wheat is grown just inland of the coast, around the edge of mostly the southwest part of Australia. There's a lot of wheat grown there, and into southern South Australia, Victoria, New South Wales, and up into Queensland in the subtropics there. So wheat's quite grown along a lot of places. I'd like to show first the recent results from our grains FACE experiment. We call it the Ag FACE for Australian Grains experiment. I'd like to show you some model performance against that data, and to show how a crop model can help interpret measured FACE data with respect to response in dry environments, and consider new experiments that might help better understand model interactions with high CO2, high temperature, and low water supply. Just to help orient where these experiments were, the main experiment commenced 2007 at Horsham. That's down in the left-hand side there, over here. And a second experiment at Walpi, up 200 kilometres north in a drier area. And you'll see those rainfall isohite bands there, ranging in Horsham around 450 millimetres annual rainfall, up to Walpi up around 300 millimetres. We think that's a significant gradient, and certainly the yields of crops reflect that. The Walpi up FACE data only ran for 2 years, whereas Horsham, we're in our ninth year and still going, and we hope to get more funding to continue. The background, the measured response to about 550 ppm in elevated CO2 levels range about 5 to 40% for wheat, that's from the literature, and greater response is attributed to water stress conditions. The measured response to this elevated level at Horsham, the 450 millimetre rainfall zone, is around a mean response of 25%. We've seen a 40% response under treatments of supplemental irrigation and warmer conditions from late sowing. We sowed the crop later to achieve that. Our simulated response, comparing that treatment, ranged 17 to 28%, a little bit less, but it was within the experimental error. Is there room for improvement? Probably there is, but you couldn't justify it from the data. And we have had reports from our work of 70% apparent response in individual treatments in the experiment. And we'd like to know, and the reason we had this drier site, what is the expected results at the drier site? What might we see? And I'm just going to show you some of that today. Recently we published the results of comparing six crop models against this data. And the data shows the models on the left-hand side there. The numbers show the response to CO2. It's the slope against the ambient yield response on the x-axis and the elevated yield on the y-axis. And you'll see these little grey dots on these little graphs there. That's the observed data of all our treatments over a three-year period. And the black dots are the modelled response. And we set the model at the mean site levels to run against our data. And what's striking here is that all these models match fairly well the slope of the response to elevated CO2 at that 550. There's a bit of variation there. You'll see APSIM wheat 1.19, that's a 19% positive response to CO2. N wheat 28, CAT 19, Cropsys 27, O'Leary Connor model 21, Salus 25%. These models are different in their computation of growth. Some are transpiration efficiency based, others radiation use efficiency, and others are both coupled. So we've got two of each in the suite of models. The observed data, 1.26, and that had a 95% confidence interval of 18 to 32% response. So now looking at a little bit more detail, the top graph shows the total growth, the total biomass, and the bottom graph shows the yield. This is the same data that I had in those composite graphs, except I've added now data from Walpiup, the drier sites, and that's in pink, the pink dots. The measured data is open circles, and the simulated data is the filled in dots. You can see they're clustered down the lower end of that graph, both in biomass and in yield. I fitted slopes through the data, and mostly they're around 25%, even though the yield response very down at the bottom from the observed data showed 1.49, it's probably a little hard to see, about 1.5. But when you look at that data, it looks like it's within the noise of our data, it's pretty much the same between Walpiup, even though we've only got four crops to compare against 48 crops, it looks similar. Now, to look at the behaviour, how might this be? I looked at the transpiration response to elevated CO2 and the soil evaporation response. And that's shown by the slopes of these graphs here. Now, this is simulated response of the seasonal transpiration and soil evaporation. And it shows about a 5% increase in transpiration over the season and a 10% soil evaporation, with no difference between the two locations. If we split this up into sowing to anthesis and anthesis to maturity, we see a little bit more transpiration, 10% increase under elevated CO2, and the same about a 10% decrease in soil evaporation in that period before anthesis. If you look at anthesis to maturity, things change, and there is a 6% less transpiration in that period and about 8% less evaporation after anthesis. So it's saying something about the water supply pre and post anthesis here from a model against that data. Coming to the daily changes, if you look at the simulated accumulated daily transpiration response to CO2, you see quite a diverse response. These are different, these graphs are just four graphs from Walpiup showing those four crops. The black dots show from our first time of sowing in 2008, initially an increase in transpiration, and then eventually it falls away and goes negative. And for a later sown crop, the red dots also show that increase in transpiration, and then it falls away and becomes negative. So the overall, those two crops had less transpiration for the season. Whereas those green and blue lines increased, one decreased savagely and the other did not decrease at all. And this is explained partly by looking at the daily transpiration responses to elevated CO2. And you'll see the impact of some periods of drying. And in the black dots, there are four drying periods where the response to elevated CO2 goes negative, then it comes back up, 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 and goes positive a bit, and so on. And in the... it's okay, we're nearly done. We're nearly there. In the blue dots, you'll see this very large decline in response. This is the daily response to CO2 compared to ambient, and then it starts to claw itself back up as the crop, as the ambient catches up using the water that was not used by the elevated crop. And this is similar to Bernacchi's and Kimball's analysis of the same kind of problem. You can expect that high CO2 would save water and you'd have water left over, but it's not always necessarily the case. as they argued, in soybean, and we think that's the same idea in wheat as well. And it could be quite varied and not as simple as a simple rule of thumb. We talk about CO2 conserving water, and as soon as we say, oh no, actually use more water, people object and can't understand the story. So from this quick look at, we see that the Horsham elevated CO2 increased the crop biomass and yield by about 25%. There were no significant differences in the response at our drier site at Walpyup. And we think the interpretation through modelling points to the importance of pre-anthesis processes under elevated CO2. Rapid early growth, leaf cover, increases LAI. We know that happens from CO2. Larger sink size, grain number per metre square. But there's potential water exhaustion despite reduced stomatal conductance. And we had that in the model, and we run out of water. Translocation, though, of stem reserves during grain filling appears to reduce this risk of water exhaustion from the greater transpiration. So that actually is a bonus and a benefit. So we think that new field experiments should be considered to help identify traits involving the rapid early ground cover and large potential stem reserves. We think this will help maximise the effects of elevated CO2 on yields in hot and dry environments. And this potentially is a new modelling opportunity to explore leaf area index and stem reserves under such conditions, potentially with AgMIP. I'll leave it there, thanks.
We have plenty of time for questions. Does anyone have questions for Gary?
Gary, Jim Bunce has evidence that fluctuating CO2 and the base systems may be causing us to substantially underestimate the true response to CO2. Now, without going into whether that's right or wrong, have you thought about what would happen if indeed the base systems have this artifact in them and the response was stronger? I can think, obviously, you're going to get more growth, which run out the water.
That's the big risk, the water. If it's true, the thing about CO2, you're getting the biomass response, that comes with the leaf area response.
Right.
That's a big benefit in a dry environment. Our leaf area indices, maximum ever get to 4, and typically a 2. So there's never complete cover ever. And so all that early stage, so a lot of this early response appears to be that advantage of that. Yeah. So there is that risk. However, because the biomass is higher, it probably does have more stem reserves to backfill in the grain if it runs out. And most of our crops do fill. We would see about 25% of the biomass at anthesis, a quarter of the biomass at anthesis could end up in grain. In our dry environment, that's a huge translocation. The normal number people talk about is 8%, 5%, maybe 10, but we've seen much stronger amounts. So
we still have time for another question. Any more questions?
I plan to have 12-minute talk.
The other thing I see with that, this seems like a really good case for doing a sensitivity analysis, where I presume you get variations soil depth from farm to farm, and then also the rainfall patterns, or maybe looking at a much longer time series in your simulations to see how the response varies.
Oh yeah, this was really just to help interpret that measured data. That was the exercise there. And I think it was quite insightful, particularly the pre-anthesis thing. But yeah, it would be interesting to test it.
Showing how in a single location, just small differences in rainfall pattern or depth of rooting could have a big effect on your depth response to CO2.
Yeah, that depth of rooting in the mallee, we have about 80 to 100 centimetres. It's very shallow because of high salt. But yeah, it's an interesting study, and I think you'll see a huge range in some of that data. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Gary.
Good, thanks.